Now, get ready for Uncensored Sports Madness. It's Dave in the City on Lux of the Week Radio.
Coast to coast, internet sports talk, Lux of the Week.
Doc Rivers continues to time and time again not get it when it comes to getting... Let him play!
Yeah, everybody have a show today. We had snow today, show today, show tomorrow.
I don't know if you want that on your credit card bill. You know, saying the WWE network on it. I mean, like,
your dad could look at it and be like, Dave, you have something to tell me?
That's the story that they still play.
It's unbelievable!
You have your LeBron in the filet. It's like, do you really care about the James Jones at the end of the bench against the Haters?
Maybe the board, the MikeFrancesa.com, was just ahead of its time.
Pioneers.
Exactly, yeah.
Pioneers, if you will. Yeah.
We listen to this guy sit at a desk and picking his teeth every day and all the dumb stuff he does. But it's not like we're changing the dial. We like Mike. You know, we hate Mike. We love Mike. All that back and forth.
Bingo.
Unbelievable.
The San Antonio Spurs, Dave. What do they say about him?
They're boring.
They're boring!
From Los Angeles, this is Dave in the City, brought to you by Lux of the Week Radio. Now, here's Dave Medina.
Good evening, sports fans, and a pleasure to have you here for 2015. Good to have you with us here in the city on Lux of the Week Radio, blogtalkradio.com, and unfortunately, that's it tonight. We tried to get the YouTube going, trying to streamline it all on one computer. Didn't work out, so we will just stay with the audio yet again, the most reliable source. Let that be a lesson to everybody out there. Audio broadcasts are always less complicated. So you know. And live chat is now up. We will announce that on the Twitter as well. Same link. Good to have you with us once again. Kevin on the Cape will be joining us in just a moment. And in hour two, we have Jerry and Lou to join us to break down all the football, including a very, very exciting college football playoff that ended on a bit of a sour note with Ohio State taking the crown. Plus, we'll talk about the NFL playoffs, what could have been for the Dallas Cowboys, and what could be for both the New England Patriots and the Seattle Seahawks. But will the Packers and Colts, respectively, get in their plans? We'll find out in hour two. And we may be hearing from a surprise guest or two as we go through these 2 hours. But it's really, really a lot of fun. And it'll be a good time tonight. A couple of announcements before we start random questions in this hour. I want to thank everybody in the Kids Club for joining us for the Kids Club podcast picks over the course of the fall. And a special congratulations to Say Hello to Otis and Andy in Seattle for winning the contest, co-champions, because they had the same record, finished first place tie with some good picks throughout the year. Week 16 did not go so well for the Kids Club. Three of the guys went 2-4 in their six picks, four bowls and two NFL games, and one went 3-3, that was John. So the final standings, you had Andy and Oatman tied for first, John in second place, and in third place, you had, or I guess you could say third and fourth. You could say third was John, and fourth was Ron in New Jersey. But a tremendous job by everybody. We heard from each of them throughout the year, and I don't know if we ever got all four of them on at once. We might have once during the season, but we had at least two or three. And so it was really a lot of fun. That was a great time. The break was good. The football was wild. College football is completely unpredictable. I mean, I think a lot of people got killed with the bowl picks, and not surprising for anybody, really. Just unbelievable. I mean, you had teams like LSU losing to Notre Dame. You had Auburn losing to Wisconsin. You had Michigan State coming back from a 20-point deficit against Baylor in the fourth quarter. And then you had Ohio State upsetting Alabama, shutting them down completely in the second half. And Oregon just humiliating Florida State in the Rose Bowl. And it all ended two nights ago when Ohio State took down Oregon and really made them look silly with their defense. And their trench play was just fantastic. I mean, Ezekiel Elliott, could not, literally could not, you know, some people say, oh, this guy couldn't be stopped, and it's sort of like hyperbole. This was literal, like, they could not stop him. They couldn't tackle him, and by the time that they brought him down, it was too late. So, major props to Ohio State for winning the championship, but I'm a little bitter about it, because I'm a big Pac-12 fan, and I really wanted Oregon to represent. It's really too bad. And some clownmanship and tomfoolery in the NFL offseason. Rex Ryan was hired today, and he had his presser today for the Buffalo Bills. And the 49ers not doing much better in that regard. Dropping Jim Harbaugh. This has all happened during the break. This is crazy how long this break is. He goes to Michigan, and now is a coach of the Wolverines. And in their place, the 49ers go with the path of least resistance and promote defensive line coach Jim Tomsula. And if that sounds underwhelming to you, imagine how that sounds to the 49ers fan. I mean, that is really, really lame. They could have gotten with Gase, the guy who was the offensive coordinator for the Denver Broncos, and he was a very hot prospect. I don't know where he goes. He might end up with Denver. Peyton Manning lost on Sunday to seal yet another first game exit for Peyton Manning. He'd look terrible. And a lot of speculation now that this could be the end of Peyton Manning's career. In the meanwhile, you had Tom Brady looking pretty good against Baltimore. Although Baltimore should have won that game in the divisional round matchup last weekend. In the NFC, Aaron Rodgers does it again. But the Cowboys really should have won that game. A terrible call on a Dez Bryant catch. The call itself was fine. It's just that the rule, the what we call Calvin Johnson rule, where you have to establish control throughout the entire course of the catch, which is stupid. His feet were down and he had control of the ball. That should be enough. His knee was down after that. Should have had the ball after that too. And then you have to wait until you have control through the whole thing after you fall down and tumble around. I mean, that's just dumb. That rule is dying, and I think it's going to be taken down over the offseason by the competition committee, because that's just ridiculous. It killed any shot of the Cowboys coming back in that game, emotionally draining. They should have had a chance to win that game. They would have been on the one. They would have scored, most likely, and it would have been up to the Packers to score back, and they could have done it, but we were cheated out of so much drama on Sunday afternoon just from that. So that, among other things, are among our topics tonight. And we segue now to America's favorite moment in Sports Talk Podcasting.
To the dance. It's time for random questions.
Good stuff.
In the city with Kevin on the case.
Thank you very much, Kevin, for waiting through all that. I had a lot to catch up on. Let's bring him on the program. Kevin, welcome back. How's it going tonight?
Pretty good, Dave. How are you?
I'm doing great. I saw your text. You said you were pumped. I'm pumped, too. This is a start to another great season. You know, it's funny. I know I we're starting the show a week later this year. I was at the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas last week, checking out the latest in technology. A lot of stuff going on. Some familiar trends, you know, things like that. It was great to have spent almost a whole week in Vegas. You ever? I know, maybe you have done that before, but that was really fun. So what have you been up to in the last 3 weeks?
I've never actually been to Vegas for the Nerd Festival. How was it?
It was terrific. And yeah, it was definitely that. I mean, a lot of fun. Yeah, you know, some attractive people at this thing, you know, and I speak of the ladies. But it was really good. I mean, the reps there, they definitely were playing up to our sensibilities here. Had some attractive femmes to advertise their products, in particular the Polk Audio Lounge. If you were there, you would have enjoyed it very much. Oh, and then the 808 was just basically a DJ and some go-go girls dancing in hot pants. I don't even know what they were selling, but it was getting everyone's attention. A lot of DJs. It was just a real party over there in the Las Vegas.
Nothing is more awkward than watching a bunch of nerds watch a bunch of hot girls dancing around.
No doubt. But it was definitely a time for us, the nerds. It was really great. Technology of every sort, too. Like, they had appliances on display, exercise equipment, home audio, like hi-fi stuff, you know, audiophile materials. That was in a different exhibit in a different part of town, and on the Strip, actually, which I saw the next day, and I loved it. I mean, that's just stuff. I wouldn't necessarily learn any major advances in speakers, but it was great to see all the companies right in one spot. It was like being at the greatest audio store ever. It was really just terrific. And the founders of many of these companies were on site, like in these exhibits. So, like, the founder of such and such. So good. So good.
Yeah, it is the absolute convention capital of the world. I've been in town for a few of those, not intentionally. They just happened to be going on when I was there. But, yeah, it's pretty unbelievable.
It's so big, in this, but at least in this case. I mean, it the Las Vegas Convention Center, if you've ever been, I'm sure you have. It is enormous. I mean, you're talking about like three times the convention space of most major cities.
Absolutely. It's, you know, the Jacob Javits Center with gambling. And,
yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Oh, yeah. You're right. Like adding gambling, and that was certainly a treat, too. I did not do so well in the slot machines as I had been in the previous few trips. I got cleaned out in that. Blackjack wasn't a whole lot better, but at least it wasn't a complete bloodbath this time around. I did do a little better in a game called Craps, and things started. I mean, it didn't start off that well, but I started to turn it around when I decided to play the Craps table the other way. Do you ever do the don't pass bar? Or do you play Craps? Are you a Craps guy?
The don't pass is great, Dave. I can't believe it took you this long to figure that out.
I know. And, you know, it finally happened when the dealer suggested it. And I'm like, but nobody plays a don't pass line. But you know what? I thought about it. Like, you have a better advantage playing the don't pass than the pass. The seven rolls so many times.
Absolutely.
She said
The problem is, you know, that you're the don't pass, you're kind of betting against the group. So there's the peer pressure, you know. This is with Crafts, everyone's crowded around and they want to be on the same team. And they're just trying to. So you're doing something against the grain of what's going on in your little circle. So you have to have the guts to do that. And the people who do that, it's peer pressure at its adult version.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, that's the one thing you fight more than.
If you can withstand your peer pressure, if you're, you know, confident in your own skin, you can win some money.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that's the thing. That's the hardest part. I think if you just play it, even if you just played it just basically, you would come out ahead, I think, more than you did if you tried to play the pass line. Just statistically, the seven, there are more sevens at roll than any other number on the table. It's just, if that's, I mean, I, you have charts and many analyses to prove that. The fight is not really that. The fight is with the other people. And I mean, it happened when I started trying it. And the guy was like, next to me. And he's like, the shooter in question was starting to get on a roll. He hit a couple of points. And I shouldn't have said anything. That's the other thing. You can't say anything. But I did. And I said, oh, wow, you're really on a roll. And I was like, yeah. It's what happens when you bet on luck. He's like, don't bet against luck. So he was trying to tweak me there, and so that's what you fight. You fight, like, people getting on you for betting the other way. And I didn't think anybody would notice, but people do notice, apparently. They're, you know, people get superstitious. They look around and...
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. The key to, especially Vegas gambling, is, or really any gambling, for that matter, is just do your own thing. Don't worry about what everyone else is doing, you know?
And you really can't be taking other people's advice, like just people standing at the table next to you. It's like, how would they know? I mean, what are they basing it on? You know, like loosey goosey stuff and karma and where the moon is. You know, how do you know? You just don't know. So you're absolutely right. Do you miss it? Do you miss Vegas now?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I do. I do. That was a good stretch of time in my early to mid 20s. A lot of fun.
I hear you, man. I do. It's really that was a fun week. It was a fun week. I came in a couple of days before the convention even started, and part of the reason for that was so I could watch the NFL games on Sunday at the sports books. And that was really a treat. I mean, it was interesting trying to find the one that really hit the zone, and it winds up being the same ones I go to all the time anyway. Like, I ended up going to Mirage for the Dallas game, and I checked in on the Aria. I didn't go to the Aria for any of the games, but it felt to me like Aria was still like more fun for me than a lot of these other places. Caesars is a little more cramped than it used to be because they added a bar like in the back of it. So, and the screens are old. Like, that's the other half of it too. Mandalay Bay, I checked it out on a different day. You know, it's I like the arrangement. Everything's situated great, but they need to upgrade their screens. Their screens are really old. It's like it's old back rear projection, I think. It's pretty pretty, I mean, I wouldn't say antiquated, but it's kind of close to that. And so Mirage, they upgraded their projection systems completely, and their methods for projecting all the games, it's just great. I really you can't miss a beat. And their biggest, and they put like their biggest screen, because the screens are divided into other screens, but the biggest screen on that whole, you know, wide strip thing is bigger than any other place I can imagine. Like, I don't think you'll see the game projected larger anywhere else on the strip. And it really was. It was really good. So I had they had the Lions and the Cowboys. More Cowboy fans than Lions fans, but Lions were all represented. Both fans go, "Wow, yeah!" And after the Lions do something, "Rah!" When the Cowboys do something, it's really great. And I can't believe that many people bet on the Cowboys to cover 7. I just was like, guys, have you learned nothing about the Cowboys? It's like they always get too many points at home. And when they get a touchdown or more, you gotta go the other way. Even if it doesn't hit, even if it doesn't work out, you have a better chance. At least I've seen it that way. When you take the points in that spot. So now, did you see the game? Like, you know what I mean? Like, it seemed like a silly idea. It seemed to me like to go with the Cowboys to lay the points was kind of a sucker bet.
Absolutely.
Has this always been the case? Like, is this just a recent thing? Is this a Tony Romo era thing? Or do you remember it being that way back in the day too?
No, definitely not back in the old days. But, when it comes to 7 points, I mean, all the games were 7 points this week. But that team in particular, they're not going to blow anybody out. So I think I'm with you 100%.
Yeah, especially in the playoffs. I mean, the thing about the playoffs is that they're lower scoring games to begin with, and so that's also why I'm never super keen on taking overs in those games, because they've seemed to me like they're lower scoring. Some of them were not, though. I mean, the Patriots Ravens game was very high scoring last week, and the Denver game was not, but that game was, and I think one other game was. So you have that, but yeah, a lot of drama. I mean, your takeaways from the football in the last couple weeks. I mean, Peyton, end of an era, maybe. Cowboys really got hosed with a terrible rule. Seahawks still showing some incredible dominance with their defense. You know, there's a lot to talk about. What struck you from the NFL's divisional weekend?
It seemed to go the way I thought it was going to go. I thought the Pats were going to win, but that's probably the best team that they're going to face in the playoffs, in the AFC, I should say. But for the rest of it, yeah, it's been overanalyzed and beaten to death. The Cowboys may have gotten screwed, but you know what? The week before, they got a gift, so it all works out.
I've been hearing about that. You know, that's true. They did get some favorable calls late, I think, against the Lions. But I didn't really think they were... You know, I didn't think were given the game, but at the same time, you know, you certainly will call into question some of those those defensive penalties. Yeah, that's a good point. All right, so moving from that, let's chat a little bit about other things. It's a great 2015. I mean, this is the year where you're starting to really feel like, more than usual, this is like the future is here. Because I saw a film called Back to the Future Part 2. And it really projected 30 years into the future from that point, which was in 1985. And I thought that 2015 was a time and place way far away, and life would be completely different than it is then, or at the time. Well, it is, but not in the way that we expected. I mean, we don't have the flying cars. We don't have guys wearing mohawks everywhere. But certainly a lot of it seems to have come to fruition. The technology is way different. And news is definitely very instant. That's something that a lot of the fantasy, you know, the fantasy things, the fantasy movies got right. You have instantaneous video. You have, you know what I mean? Like, you don't have, it's much more on demand, much more accessible now. So that's my takeaway from what 2015 is for versus what we thought it would be. How do you feel going into a year this, you know, this far into the 21st century?
You just saw Back to the Future Part 2 now?
No, I've seen it many times. Like, I saw it when I was a kid. I've seen it again over the years, and you know, I think last year or the year before I saw it once again on DVD. So I've seen it a few times.
I think they got the video kind of chatting thing right, because then they used to talk to people on the screens, which is sort of the version of, and people do Skype now, those
yep.
kind of things. They got that part right.
Yeah, they did. And they can do it on giant screens,
yeah,
too.
They didn't get the hovercraft flying car, like you said, the highways in the sky. But, you know, they could figure that out soon. But, no, yeah. 2015, whatever. Technology, that's great. I still have my old little cell phone. But I'm sure there's wonderful advances going on that I don't know about.
Do you anticipate getting a smartphone in the near future?
Yeah, it's kind of a probably. I used to think that everyone else was annoying me with their smartphones and the text messages that I couldn't, that didn't translate to it. It just became a bunch of symbols and I couldn't be involved in things. And now I'm starting to come over to the other side where I feel like I'm the annoying person. I feel like it used to be my friends were annoying me with messages and, you know, multiple people on a email chain or whatever, text message chain that you fancy people call it. But they were annoying me. Now I'm starting to feel like I'm annoying them because I don't know what they're saying or doing. So, yes, Dave, I think 2015 may be the year that I get one of those fancy phones.
Oh, I like it. I like it a lot. I do. I like it. This is good. That's crazy. You finally will have a smartphone. I think everybody will have one eventually. I resisted for a while, too, though. I didn't really have one until 2 years. Man, what was it now? 3 years ago now? 2012, I think, is when I started having a smartphone. Maybe it was 2011. Do you remember what year it was? It may have been 2012. I don't know, but I had that Droid X2, which was slow as molasses. But then I wised up and got the S4, the Samsung Galaxy S4. It's really nice. I had some issues with storage at one point in time, but that's been resolved. And right now it's rock solid. So I'll probably move up to the S5 or S6 whenever that occurs. Problem is, like, my phone service is way too expensive. It's very annoying. And so I'm not sure what to do about that. What is your provider? I mean, if you're willing to divulge, what is your cell phone provider?
Yeah, that's part of my issue is just the extra money. You know, we've talked many times in the past. I spent winters without heat just because I felt it was more in my benefit to spend money on other things. So to upgrade or to buy something new, rather spend money on my friends or spend money on doing other things that I might enjoy.
Yeah, and I hear you on that. I mean, you have great, what is that word? Self-control to be able to execute that desire to be practical with your money. Many cannot resist the temptation. And so I applaud you for that. That's a major salute to the junk man for those things. Yeah, you know. There's no reason to if you don't need to. Heat, I'm not sure about. I mean, if it's 15 below, or even just 15, I think that would be reason enough to put it on. But what's
yeah,
your
th- you, you get some layers and, you know, a space heater or something. You're fine.
Do you have a threshold? Like, do you have a threshold when it's too cold to go on without heat?
Maybe like 15, you know, 15s.
Okay.
You know, you also don't want to, you know, freeze your pipes in your place because that's going to cost you more than what it would cost to heat on.
Oh, yeah. Nah. But overall, you're a bigger man than me there in that spot. I think I would have probably put the heater on all the way up to like 50. Maybe like 45 would be my threshold. So a good 30 degrees more than yours. I mean, like right now, here in Santa Monica, what is your coldest month, by the way? Most people, it's February. Would that be the case in where you are?
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Yeah, it's pretty consistent because most places it's not even 50. It's 63 outside. So it's not even close to needing a heater here in California. And it probably will remain that way the rest of the week, too. The low may be, you know, 50 degrees, which is nothing. I mean, that's no problem at all. We had some pretty seriously cold days, though, recently. Like, we had some lows in the, upper 30s, low 40s. For us, that's very cold.
Wow.
Yeah. California,
how
that's...
How did I survive out there?
I don't know. We did it, though. We made it. We got through it somehow.
All those grapes in the vineyards must have been... frozen.
Probably. I think it affected NorCal too. So yeah, I think that was all. Yeah, that I think they were. Hopefully, nothing too bad in that whole exchange. So that's always a caveat going through the cold like that. And Florida has the same problem. If you remember, there was one year, maybe 7 years ago, where it was so cold in Florida, the Orange Bowl was more like an ice bowl. The Orange Bowl. You know, imagine that in South Florida. And it was such a big problem that the orange crops took a huge hit because they all froze too much. And so they didn't, you know, they didn't grow out right. And the oranges were rendered inedible. And that set orange prices back for a while. Like now orange juice became more expensive and so on. So that's what you got to watch for. Like, you know, the residual effects. Everything's got a chain reaction effect. It's really crazy. Speaking of which, gas prices, incredibly low right now. Can't believe that we got back to under $3 around here. Even here in California, we got back under $3. Blows my mind. Like, I did not think we were going to get to this point through the rest of my life, and here we are. So, yeah, good spot. How about you?
Yeah, it is pretty... things are always more expensive out here than on the mainland. And but yeah, you fill up and it shuts off, and you look up and it's $25. And you're like, wait, really? Maybe I did something wrong.
It's like, did I only do half a tank?
Yeah. Like, what's going on? I thought I was on empty. But no, yeah, it's a nice little reprieve. Everybody's saving, you know, between $40 and $60 a month. So that's good.
Indeed. Very good. It's a good deal, and I'm really glad to be. I'm really glad to have it. I got to take advantage, though. Maybe fill up one more time before they spike up again, because I feel like the prices could jump
Dave,
back.
It's not gonna spike up. You'll be fine.
Yeah, but you know, I still want to take advantage. You know, while the prices are as good as they are,
the Republicans are taking. You'll have low gas prices for a while.
Okay, I like it. I do like that. That's a good deal. So with all that said, I mean, what are your goals? I mean, I know everybody we get a little hackneyed with what are your resolutions? What are your goals? But what do you hope to do in 2015? Like what inspires you? Like, what would you like to do this year? If anything pops to mind.
The only thing I've ever wanted, I never make New Year's resolutions. Those are kind
of it didn't have to be a resolution, though. Like, just anything you want to do.
No, I every year, and some years are better than others, but every year I just go into the new year saying I just want to be happy. And, make different choices in order to do that, and some work out and some don't. But in the end, you just want to make good choices. You know, you just want to be happy. You want to, you know, follow your instincts, whether it's a new job or new, you know, different hobbies or activities. But I never got into the whole, I want to be anything specific, really. You just, overall, you just want to be happier than you were last year. It's sort of a, it's, I say this to the kids who work for me all the time, or you want to be better tomorrow than you were today. And you want to be just a little more focused on what you're doing. So I think it's just an overall thing where you just want to do better. You just want to, whether it's in your work or your life or your relationships, just, you know, be a better, just try to be a better person. It's not going to work out. We all make mistakes. But as long as you're really trying, making an effort to make tomorrow better than today, that's really all you can do.
Well, I like that a lot, man. I do. I do. That's really well said. It is very nicely put. It just occurred to me that I forgot to ponder the, sheesh, look at this line. No, I'm sorry. I don't want to switch this to the subject of me, but that is really cool. I mean, I think that's tremendous that you have that kind of heart to want to improve yourself. I don't think many people do that. I think a lot of people think that, they already are the cheese, and they don't, you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of guys who don't, well, a lot of guys with a big arrogant attitude that feel like they don't need to improve themselves, that they're already good. The other people need to improve them around them. It's like, no, I think all people are flawed, and it's good to improve in many ways. My dad's been striving to improve in some ways, mostly with health, and he wants to get better. I think that's great.
Right. Yeah, it comes down to whatever is important to you. It could be losing weight. It could be making more money, saving more money, paying down your debt, being better, you know, getting more in touch with your family, whatever it is, you know, adopting a pet. Who the hell knows? But whatever is important to you, you know, that's where I'm, that's what you should, when it comes down to it, you know, you got to look at yourself. You got to look yourself in the mirror and just try to do better things. You know, just don't be angry. Don't be mean. Just try to be nicer. And then, you know, you get things done, and everyone's got their own stresses. And Lord knows I have less than most people. But, you know, just try to make a significant positive impact on your daily life, because you know, we're not, you and I and all the people who listen to us, and none of us are going to save the world, you know, but you can improve your neighborhood. You know, you can do the little things to help the people around you. You don't have to, none of us are going to cure cancer and invent the internet like Al Gore did. But we can help the neighborhood. That's really what it's about.
That's really cool. Do you ever do, like, you know, volunteer projects to, you know, community work and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, well.
Wow, that's cool.
Actually, it's funny you say that. I was thinking about high school the other day, and we used to have required community service hours in high school where you had to do 250 community service hours as part of your high school requirement. Which I always thought was crazy, you know, forcing people to do community service. It should be more of something you want to do out of your own heart and your own mind. You get I've gotten way more out of that in my adult life, doing, picking and choosing things that I want to do or help out. I don't think it should ever be forced on someone if it's not in your
right
lifestyle, if it's not in your plans. You're not going to get anything out of it. So, yeah, I mean, I'm all for that. I think people should do that. If they have the time and they have something in their life or their neighborhood that they care about, they should certainly support that, whether it's just for money or it's their time. Sometimes your time is more valuable to someone than just writing a check or donating something. But if it's not something you want to do or something you feel strongly about, it's not worth it.
Cool beans. I like it. Yeah, you know, it's... I always feel like I'm not doing adequately enough in that arena. That would be nice to spend maybe just a day. But then I always wonder, like, do they make that a weekly thing and a monthly thing? And so right now my contributions have mostly been through monetary means. Dollars going to different organizations.
Which is totally fine. And trust me, someone who I've worked for nonprofits, we love guys like you too. You know, guys who are super busy, but still have a good space in their heart, so they give money. You know, there's nothing wrong with that.
Cool. Yeah, and so hopefully we both can be making a difference one way or another. Very good. So let's start our random questions tonight. And
nice.
Check in the chat room, and once again, it's dead. But I have some questions of my own for you. So here we go.
Nice.
All right. You ready? Okay, here we go. There we go. All right. I had one just off the top of my head, and I forgot about it. But, oh, yeah. How far do you think you have to park your car off the curb when you're parking in the street? Like, what do you feel like is the most you'd be willing to park your tires off the curb? I know they have a rule for it in the DMV, but in relative terms, how far do you feel comfortable with before you feel like it's too far off the curb?
Oh, you got to get as close to that curb as possible. I mean, I would err on the side of too close. Hit the curb, 6 inches, maybe tops.
Oh wow, you're a hard marker. 6 inches, that's tight.
You don't want to stick your rear out in the middle of the parking lot and get it smacked off.
No, I agree with that. I mean, if it's a tight street, and I know the streets are tighter out east than they are out here, but even in Santa Monica, they're tight. I mean, you want what good street? You go to suburbs for that. But nah, I get it. I totally get it. I really like to park the car. You said 6 inches. I think that's about what I want. Like, I want it like you put your thumb and your index finger out like this. Well, you can't see it, but if you put your thumb and your index finger out, like, oh wait, maybe not, maybe more than that, but let's say you put your thumb and, yeah, 6 inches, so basically, right about 6 inches. I would probably even go as far as maybe 10, but I feel like I may have parked my car a little too far off the curb tonight, but it's just tonight. I'll move it out tomorrow, and it won't be a big deal. So, yeah, I think 6 inches sounds good, you know. I'm always worried about hitting the curb because, I mean, I want to hit the tire to hit the curb initially so that, you know, it hits it so you can get an idea of, like, how to guide it. But I don't want to, like, scrape it along the curb. Like, some people just scrape the tires up on the curb, and it's like sitting on the curb. And I feel like that's dangerous for the tires.
Nah, I used to think the same thing, but the tires are fine, and the curb isn't going to hurt it.
Oh, okay. Well, good to know. It is. So just get as close as you can. And I do pretty well with it. It's just a struggle, just in general, the parallel park. I'm really bad at it. How are your parking skills? Like, how would you evaluate yourself as a parallel parker?
Oh, absolutely terrific. You know, you grow up in New York, you have to know how to parallel park. People in New York probably parallel park better than they do in a normal empty shopping mall or supermarket.
That's funny. That is funny.
You've been parallel parking your parents' cars before you were old enough to drive, just trying to get into the spot. So
right.
It depends on where you grow up. You know, you grow up in a heavily populated area, you'll be better at certain things. And I mean, I couldn't drive a tractor. I couldn't pull a boat into a dock, but I could parallel park in the middle of downtown Manhattan, no problem.
How about that? I don't know how you do that. That must be so stressful because you've got cars coming at you all the time, going down Manhattan. Good stuff. And I envy, and I like to see you, do it sometime. If we ever meet in person, I'd like to show me the tips, like how to do it right. I'm not good at parallel parking. I'm just not. But I've gotten better, so I'm not a complete joke. First of all, you never go front first, right? That's the number one rule. I've heard that a couple times. Back first.
That's insane. You don't go front first. That's insane. You'll never figure that out.
Oh, I know, because like it's harder. This is harder. Everything's harder. I mean, it just doesn't seem right. You would have to have a lot of space in front of you to do that and come out of it successfully. Sometimes you do, and then it is one motion. But if you don't, there's no way. I mean, how do you navigate?
You sort of just have to be aggressive. If you just have to say, I'm fitting to this spot. I'm not going to worry about the cars on the road who are passing me. You know, they'll go around. You know, if you want to put your hazards on or something to get their attention, they'll go around you. You just sort of have to pretend that you're the only car in the area, and you're going to fit into that spot. I don't really care what everyone else is doing around me. I don't care who's walking on the sidewalk. I don't care who's looking at me. Just bang it in there, and you'll be fine. It's way more mental than it is physical act of turning the wheel and fitting into the spot. You just sort of have to say, I'm getting into that spot. I don't really care. Everyone else is going to avoid me. It'll be fine. And then you get in there, and all of a sudden you park, and holy crap, you're there, and you don't have to pay $50 to park in a garage.
Beauty. Yeah, no, yeah, and I hate paying for parking. I like to avoid it wherever possible or minimize the amount that I have to pay for the parking. That's a definite must. Absolutely. You wouldn't want that. So these are great parking tips. I like it. Now how far in, like let me be more specific. How much of the car has to be sticking out of the other car? Like so, you know, you have to go in a certain amount, right, before you pull in. Am I right? So how much of the rear end of your car has to be sticking out into the space before you can make your descent? Like half the car, a quarter of the car, three quarters of the car? Like how much do you think would be a good amount?
I'm not really sure what you're talking about.
Well, because what I mean is that as you come up on the space, you know, there's two cars like that border space.
You sort of want the front of your car to be at the car. If you look at it where the cars in front of you and behind you, you want the front of your car to be a little past their driver's side door before you reverse.
Wow, that's deep. So you want the
you don't want it to be you don't want it to be parallel with their car. You want it to be pretty close to the front though. You want it to be about their side view mirror.
Okay. So you know what I mean? Parallel is ridiculous. Like you couldn't do it. But I think I've been doing it too. I haven't been going far enough, so I got to go all the way to the
That's probably you probably could be getting tripped up on that. You probably don't go too far.
There you go.
You're not going to hit their car, Dave. Don't worry.
That's always been the thing. I think that's what it is. I'm always worried about hitting the car in front, and so I'm not going to do that. Okay, that's good to know. That is good to know. Okay. Well, I can reciprocate this.
No, you're more like it. You are more likely to hit the car in the back than the front. And if you do, you're just gonna tap the front of their car. That's what bumpers are for. I mean, yeah. It's not a big deal.
Yeah, you live and you move on. It's very true. Okay, well, good to this is good to know. I mean, I like all this information. It really helps. It's gonna make things a lot smoother, I think, going forward. Wow, we've only got 12 minutes left. That's crazy. That's great. Let's chat about something a little bit interesting. All right. Oh, gosh. So good. That's really good stuff. Is it too early to talk about Super Bowl halftime? Should we wait for Super Bowl week for that? Yeah, I guess we should. Okay. I'll ask you this. We've done this before. We do this every year. Who do you think's going to go to the Super Bowl? We've only got four choices, so you can pick one out of each two, and then we'll see how it goes.
Well, I'll tell you this thing. I was thinking about this today, that there's no way the Patriots lose on Sunday, but equally, there's no way they win the Super Bowl.
Nice call. Nice call on that. Because do you really think they're going to beat the Seahawks with that defense? No way. No way are they going to beat that team. Does that imply then that you think that the Seahawks will make the Super Bowl? Because I can't imagine that the Packers would lose to the – I mean, the Packers would beat the Patriots necessarily.
Yeah, I think the NFC Championship game is more of a toss-up. But I think either whichever NFC team wins is going to win the Super Bowl.
Okay, so even if the Packers were in there,
I'm sure their odds right now that, you know, NFC versus AFC in the Super Bowl, I would take the NFC, whatever the odds are right now.
Let's go look it up. We can end the debate right here. Let's see. All right, so NFL futures odds. We'll go to VegasInsider.com for that information. And they give you the odds from everywhere.
Great website, by the way.
Oh, yes, I concur. It's tremendous. It's been very...
I grew up on that website. That's a terrific site.
Good stuff. I love it.
It's been around forever. It's awesome. They were doing more of those analytics before anyone else was.
Amazing. Really, that's fun. See, it's not only a great site, but a site that's ahead of the curve. That's important. And Vegas always seems to be ahead of the curve, right? All right, so let's break it down that way. If we look at the odds to win the Super Bowl, and we just got to look at NFC versus AFC. I think that might be under props. So let's see. So I put down future odds. Maybe props. Should have it here. I'll get that in a minute. But may have to go to a different source for this because they're only showing me like individual teams. But I'm looking for additional odds. Well, I have future odds on here. Let's see. They're actually giving you odds for they're giving you odds for next year's Super Bowl. That's nuts. Can you imagine next year's Super Bowl odds? That would be just ridiculous. Anyway, let's see. All right, so I'll go to my alternate source, and let's see about futures. One sec. Okay, here we go. Okay, so NFL props. Oh, gosh. They had this. They've had this before. I've seen this before. Like, you know how...
Yeah, don't worry about it.
It's in the Super Bowl. You know, like, the Super Bowl has its own series of champ... Yeah, you know, okay, here we go. They have one for the end.
I can just end this suspense. It's probably 3-1.
3-1, you say? Okay. Let's look
at
this.
Probably.
Oh, okay, here we go. This is it. I finally found it. AFC plus 130, NFC minus 150. I think that is 3-1. Let me guess. Convert this to fractions. So, yeah, you know, get 150 for 100. So... how is that in terms of, I think that is 3-1. Well, you're really good at this stuff. That is really good. That is really, really good.
You should have seen me in my 20s. I was a star.
Nailed that. That is incredible. Now how do I change this thing to fractionals so I can that is what it is. I mean, because 150 to get one. So 150 over 100, so that's 1.5 over 1, which is 3. Yeah, it's 3-1. That's amazing. You're good. And I would take it, too. I would take it. It would be easy. Should I take it now, or should I just jump on it? And, you know,
what I would do is take it now, and then, you know, when the line comes out, maybe you put something on the bats, but, you know, just to sort of figure out what's going on, but... If it's the Packers, you know, it's going to be 3. If it's the Seahawks, it's going to be 6. So, you know, you have to wait a little bit before you hedge your bets there.
I'm saving that, too. I'm saving that comment in my mind and on the podcast to verify that, because that's a good call. So, like, if it's the Packers, it'll be 3 points. If it's the Seahawks, it'll be 6. And I think you'd be right, too. I think that'd be right on. And I don't know, after a while, you get the sense for, like, what the point spread will be. Because as for all, it's not an evaluation of the teams as much as it's an evaluation of
absolutely.
How... Yeah.
Which amazes me. As we go year after year after year, people don't realize that.
It's true. You know, you hear it a couple times, and it's borne itself out. It is a measure of how the public thinks of these two particular teams.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing how they people talk about how I can't believe this team or my favorite team is this many points, and they don't care about your favorite team. They care about getting them as close as they can on both sides of the betting public, and so they can make their percentage. That's all they care about. They don't care about who's better, who's worse, or how much, you know, more impressive some team is. People like you listen to the sports radio shows, and people get insulted about the betting lines. You know, they have no idea. It's not what they're about.
It'll be a fun time watching these games. I'm happy to inform you that our friend John in Greenwich, a.k.a. Yachts, will be back in town in Los Angeles over the weekend. So we will catch up and have some more fun activities planned.
That's a good man right there, Dave.
I agree.
That's a good partner in crime.
It will be a blast.
There's really no better wingman to have than a 6'4". You know, 250-pound solid rock. Who's also a lawyer. You know, you really can't find a better guy to go out with.
I agree. Yeah, you're on the money there.
Plus, he's a nice guy.
You know, oh, absolutely.
That's the thing. You look at him and you think, holy crap, this is just some UFC demon fighter. And then you talk to him and he's a sweetheart, but he also happens to know, you know, the penal code, and he can also snap your neck in half. so it's good. There's really no better guy to go out with. Granted, I only got to meet him once, but I felt very safe in his presence.
That's cool, buddy. That really is. Quick gun to your head on this. When do you think you'll see him again? Like, do you think you'll be meeting up with him in the near future in the Northeast?
Oh, I have no idea. You know me. I rarely get over the bridge out here. I mean, I am heading to his neck of the woods this weekend, but I've got a lot of things planned.
Okay.
My sister's having twins, so that's a whole thing. And
wow.
But I don't know. I got a vacation planned in February, which is shocking to most people who know me because I haven't had one in 7 years.
Right.
He does come up. He does come up to the Cape, you know, every once in a while. And his parents have a house up here, so that's probably the next time I would see him. It's probably this summer.
Beauty. That should be, seriously, that's going to be cool. I'm glad. And your sister having twins? Do the dance, man. That's pretty cool. I don't know why it's extra exciting with twins, but it is. It's really cool.
Two boys.
Wow. That's crazy. She's carrying a lot of man in there. Am I right? Well, right now the boys, but that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah. So congrats to your sister, and I'm looking forward to them having a wonderful, healthy life. And have they decided on names for the two kids to be?
No, not yet. So far, I'm just referring to them as A and B. So no names yet. You know, you never know. Dave could be in the mix.
That'd be a good choice.
But she's young, so they could have some sort of weird
Mm-hmm.
Cool names.
Cool.
I don't even know what people name kids anymore. They're just strange.
They're funnily spelled. Yeah, I'm not going to speculate on that really, but good stuff. It is. Wow. Did you have any idea that the Portland Trailblazers are red hot? I had no clue. They're 30-8, just like the Hawks are.
I didn't even know this team.
They actually have a pretty good team. Check them out sometime. LaMarcus Aldridge, Damian Lillard, Nick Batum, Robin Lopez. It's a good team. That is a good team.
I'm probably not going to check them out anytime soon.
All right. Fair enough. We'll see about that. Let's see. We have 2 minutes. Any comments on the Hall of Fame inductions? I am completely not privy to this at all, so I will have to just defer to your comment.
The Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yes. The Baseball Hall of Fame, to be specific. Yeah.
Yeah. Craig Biggio. It's still mind-boggling to me that he's in the Hall of Fame. It's equally mind-boggling that Pedro Martinez did not get 100% of the votes, but whatever. People are stupid. Randy Johnson. Okay, fine. Randy Johnson. The interesting part, I thought, was you always wonder about people who don't vote for certain guys, for certain lock Hall of Famers. And they talk about, like Eddie Murray, they talk about, you know, he wasn't good with the media and all this kind of stuff. Randy Johnson gets almost the best percentage of 97.1, which was like the sixth best all time. Randy Johnson was the most miserable person ever. I thought if anyone would get some sort of backlash from the media, it would be Randy Johnson. Not saying he wouldn't be in the Hall of Fame because he's a lock first ballot Hall of Famer. But I thought that was sort of an underreported aspect of it, how this guy who was a jerk to anyone who ever interviewed him. I talked to any single person that I ever met. I mean, when I was at MLB, I wasn't a reporter, I was an editor. But they used to talk horror stories about trying to interview that guy.
Wow.
And just what an asshole he was. And I thought that was kind of funny how he got all, you know, I thought there would be some sort of, you know, they, you know, Jim Rice, or people who are always rough with the media, you know,
yep,
the list of guys that they get the votes, but they don't get it as much because they're jerks. And apparently he must have, I don't know, maybe he's a nicer guy than was reported, but that was surprising. John Smoltz, I thought he would get in. 85% was a little surprising, but similar career to Schilling and those kind of things, but he had that 3-year stretch where he was the best closer in the game. You know, 50 saves for 3 years in a row was something that was unique, something that was different that set him apart from guys like Schilling and Messina and those kind of guys. So I wasn't surprised with that. I mean, Craig Biggio is still, it's just still kind of dumb. He was just an okay guy for 20 years, which is fine, but that was a little surprising. So to me, Pedro is the guy. He's the head of the class.
Cool. And he really was great. I mean, he was just truly on another level. It was a privilege for me to watch him in his prime. It was really, really good. And I'll forever remember that. That was certainly...
It was funny. After that happened, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a huge Mets fan, I was when we grew up. And when he went to the Mets after the Red Sox, we used to talk about how he got us to go to the Mets games again. He wasn't that good then.
Right.
But you would look in the paper and you'd find out when he was pitching, and you'd buy a walk-up ticket. You know, you'd go just for that. And we were trying to remember another pitcher that we did that for. And we were too young for Doc Gooden and that kind of stuff. And we couldn't think of anybody else. Or we knew he was, you kind of knew he was shot, but you still went. You still paid $35 to go sit in the upper deck just because he was pitching that day.
That is a cool deal. I never, you know what, it's funny, all the excitement I've been in watching him play. I never seen him pitch live. That's what's because he's in the, it was in the AL most of his career, but never saw him pitch live. It's funny. He does a remarkable job as a commentator now too. That's the best part. All right, well, yeah. Go ahead, Kev.
No, it's just going to end with the Piazza thing is silly. He'll be in like 2 years, but it's kind of dumb.
Well, that's just how the baseball media is. I mean, they're a bunch of petty guys who think their self-worth is much more than it really is. So that's my only comment.
It's funny to me how people get so self-righteous where speculation and hearsay, where a lot of, I mean, people who vote on that stuff aren't saints, but apparently it's all holier than thou when it comes to that kind of thing.
Word up. Okay, so got that ready to roll. Kev, it's really been a blast. Looking forward to a great 2015. Have a great rest of your evening. And if you'd like, stay tuned. We'll have some more sports to chat about with our friends Jerry and Lou. So take it easy, buddy. We'll catch up soon.
Absolutely. I'll call back and listen, but I'll talk to you later.
Okay. That's Kevin on the Cape, and a great start to our year. Let's move on into our next hour, and in this hour we will get back to college football talk and the pros as well. Really quite an exciting time in college football. Maybe the ending wasn't as exciting as we'd hoped. We certainly wanted a better game than that, but nonetheless a lot of fun. And let's recap all that was with the bowl season and with the NFL divisional round, plus a little preview to the NFL's championship games, the NFC title game, the AFC title game, a lot to cover. Well, then let's start. Well, we'll start with our friends Jerry in Piscataway and Lou in good old Hoboken, where now the Oatman is now part of the mix, I've heard. So let's introduce them one by one. First, Jerry. Jerry, it's been too long. How's it going tonight?
So is this real? Am I back on Dave's show?
You are back. You know,
It's been too long, man. How are you?
It has been too long.
Me on.
I feel kind of bad that we've held off doing the guests for a while. But
you got some shows going on. We both have busy schedules, but it feels good to be back. I'm glad to be back.
I love it, man. And we'll get back in the groove sometime soon. Man, you should. You know, there are reasons to be pumped right now. And that goes for you and for Lou, who we now introduce to the program. Lou, welcome to the show. How's it going tonight?
It's going great. Good to be back. It's been a minute or two, but that's all in the past. I'm glad to be here. Hope you're doing well.
Sir. I'm doing well, very well, and I imagine there's reason for you guys that you both are doing pretty well too. We brought it up at the top of the show. Jim Harbaugh is now a Michigan head coach, and you know that's just such a huge buzz for the Big Ten and for Michigan. We'll start with that because I know you both are pretty close to the program. Jerry, your thoughts. Everybody talked it up. Everybody was hoping for it. And here he is. And he looks like he has a whole new attitude going to Michigan. And almost like a sense of relief not being a part of the NFL grind anymore. It's funny. I am very impressed and surprised by how much he's responded to the opportunity. So I want to get your thoughts as a longtime Michigan fan. Luke, too, as he is as well. But we'll start with you. What do you think about Harbaugh in Big Blue?
I'm pumped, Dave. This program has needed something for, you know, a number of years, since the Lloyd Carr era, really. I'm pumped. They go down, they lose to the team, you know, it was Minnesota at home this year. I mean, they didn't make a bowl game. I mean, it's not, you know, what you're expected out of a program like Michigan. And they need a whole, you know, revamp, a whole kick in the butt. And I think Harbaugh is the perfect guy to do it. I think he'll recruit really well. I think he's a good coach, and I think he'll definitely put Michigan football in a position to compete. Now, is it going to happen right away? I don't think so. You know, I'd give him a couple years. A lot of people sometimes get delusional, and they think, next year we're going to, do this and do that. No, you know, give him some, you know, a year or two to recruit and build some of these kids up and, you know, put the team in a position to you know, make a run in the Big Ten. And I'm ecstatic. I don't know who else they could have put in there that could have been any better. I mean, some of the names that were coming out, like Schiano and, you know, Butch Davis, whatever, but he was the guy. I mean, they were talking about him, you know, in the middle of the season. And I know, you know, people in Ann Arbor were already making T-shirts, Harbaugh come home, this and that. And I'm really happy that Michigan landed their guy.
It's a beautiful thing. I wasn't fully buying into it. It just seemed like it seemed almost too good to be true, like a real fairy tale ending. But here it is, and I love that press conference. He just looks so – I never seen him really smile, so that was really cool to see. Lou, let's get your thoughts on Harbaugh to Michigan.
It's kind of interesting because one of my closest friends from high school, like, he's a huge Michigan fan. Like, Michigan to him is like the Yankees are to Jerry and I, or like the Cowboys are to me on a different level. So I've gone out to Ann Arbor with him before. I've gone to a couple other Michigan road games with him before. And we were at the Michigan-Notre Dame game this year, where Michigan got embarrassed, shut out, you know, just a complete joke. And after the last play of the game, which is actually a defensive touchdown by Notre Dame, which got called back, you know, we're storming out of the building trying to get back to the car. And I thought he was going to – I mean, I was scared for what he was going to do because I know we all have our fits, but he's just as bad. And he just goes to me real calm. He's like, well, they're going to have to throw $10 million a year at Jim Harbaugh. Like, this is after the second game of the season. Turned out to be they didn't have to throw quite that much money at him. But he's a guy who's really in touch with that team and that program really day in, day out. And so I took it from him that early in the season that was the handwriting was on the wall. It was kind of the worst-kept secret in all of football, pro or college, you could really say. And I think that program is kind of, like Jerry said, it's been in a search for an identity ever since Lloyd Carr stopped coaching. You know, they have that. This happened when Carr was still the coach. They have that. You know, they refer to it as the horror, which was the game they lost to Appalachian State in 07, and that was really the first sign of it, that some of the old, like, Big Ten established ways just weren't working anymore. The game was changing. The offenses were changing. The players were so much faster at every position. So then after Carr departs, they try to go in the Rich Rod direction, and it just was a really, really, really bad fit. That guy couldn't get a break. You know, none of those old-school, blue-blood Michigan men liked this guy with a draw who's, you know, you think the only time they'd ever left the state of West Virginia was for WVU road games. I mean, they thought he was just this dumb pick with a weird offense. And he never had a chance. And Brady Hoke comes in, and he had spent time on the Michigan staff before. But even then, how established of a coach was from San Diego State without the greatest of records? He has his best seasons while playing with Rich Rod's players. The team never had an offensive identity. It was kind of get Denard Robinson the ball and see what happens. Then a year later, he gets hurt, and they're forced to press Devin Gardner back into quarterback duty, where he'd been playing receiver for that whole season 2 years ago in 2012. So they haven't had no stability and really have not had an identity, to make a long story short, in probably 7 years. This changes things now. And now they have, you know, one of their guys, you know, a Michigan man, even though that term is really annoying, Michigan man for life. And now they have one of their guys who's fiery. He's where he wants to be. He's getting paid plenty. I think, there was a lot of speculation 4 years ago that he was going to take this job in place of Rich Rod. But at that point, he hadn't, you know, dipped his toe into the NFL. And so you can't blame Harbaugh from going to Stanford to the 49ers, because how often does that, you know,
is that not going to come at your door? If he goes to Michigan from Stanford and doesn't do well, no NFL team is going to come knocking at his door. And if he goes to Michigan and does well and then goes to the NFL, well, then he looks like a bad guy to Michigan. They're going to look upon him negatively as a traitor, as a guy who just used him as a stepping stone. And I'm sure he didn't want that either. Now he's in a place where, you know, you can see him staying there for a very long time. He's still a relatively young guy, very accomplished. I think he's probably seen, at least at this point, all he wants to see of the world of coaching in the NFL. I think anyone that gets into coaching, even if they've already played in the NFL before, they want to reach the highest point you can. That's the highest point in the profession in the entire world. I can't blame someone for ever leaving a college job, no matter how successful it might be, no matter how much money they're making, to go take an NFL head coaching job. So he did that, and now he's back where I think, like you said, he really wants to be.
Yeah, and to piggyback off Lou for a second, as far as, you know, an identity, I want to see a quarterback who can put the ball in a guy's chest when it needs to. I haven't seen a quarterback be able to do that on this team since 2007 with Chad Henne. I don't need to see the Tate Forciers, the Denard Robinsons, the Devin Gardners. Give me a quarterback who could drop back and put a ball in the guy's chest when it needs to be. I mean, I haven't seen that in 7-8 years. I mean, it's insane.
Yep, and that quarterback right now is not on the roster.
Nope. He is not. And I read something a little crazy the other day. You probably would have saw it too, that Braxton Miller, people were questioning if maybe he'd go to Michigan. You know, they don't have a quarterback. They have Jim Harbaugh. You know, it's not a huge trip from, you know, Ohio State to Michigan University. And, you know, instead of going to, you know, Florida State or an Oregon, maybe he'll go to Michigan. But I don't see that happening. I think Florida State and Oregon are in better positions to win now. The kid has one more year left. I think he'll go to either one of those schools.
Would he have to – I should know this, but I don't. Since he missed this
He graduated, so he
year,
doesn't have to sit out. He's done.
He would not have to sit. Okay, that was –
Nope, he could play right away.
That's a big question. Well, I put nothing more than an outside chance on that. He's probably best going somewhere outside the Big Ten. Mm-hmm. But it's not crazy. It's not insane.
No, it's not. And I just want to see, you know, I'm hoping, I know Harbaugh will recruit. I'm hoping it'll be, sooner than later, because the quarterbacks we've had have been horrid, man. I mean, Devin Gardner, it was very hard to watch the past 2 years. Denard Robinson was fun, but, you know, the guy couldn't put a ball, you know, through a window. I mean, it's crazy. Tate Forciers,
he's not a quarterback.
He's not a quarterback.
Look at Denard Robinson now. He's playing, started about 6 or 7 games at running back for Jacksonville this year.
Exactly.
And did well. He's a very good football player, but that doesn't make he's not necessarily a quarterback.
They've been putting these guys who are athletes back there, you know, running this offense. And, you know, when it comes to playing teams like Ohio State and bigger teams with good defenses, they're not going to let you get out of the pocket and run crazy. You're going to have to drop back and throw the ball down the field. And these guys couldn't do it. They couldn't even throw a 10-yard out. I mean, it was just very frustrating watching Michigan's quarterback play for the past couple of years. And I'm hoping, you know, they get a guy who can, put the ball where it needs to be and, not as sloppy as these other guys have been.
Yeah, a team like Ohio State with the athletes they have on defense, even a team like Penn State, once they get fully reloaded, a team like Minnesota, who's a program that's made a pretty nice rise over the past few years, they will beg you to let your quarterback out of the pocket.
Right.
Because you're not going to shake those defenders just by being shifty. And if you want to throw on the run, you better be a damn good, thrower on the run in order to put the ball where you need to put it. You basically need to be Russell Wilson if you're going to beat teams like that outside of the pocket.
I just want to see talent in Michigan again, man. I mean, I feel like I'm watching, they convert, the tight end to the receiver.
Devin Funchess.
Name I talk about. Yeah, Funchess.
Yeah, Devin
Funchess. I want to see guys I want to see guys like they have with Braylon Edwards and Mike Hart and Jason Avant, those type of guys who were talented players. I mean, I haven't seen much talent, at Michigan in a while. I mean, I can't think of many guys who, off the top of my head, in the past, 2 or 3 years, who really, it's like, oh man, that guy was awesome. I couldn't think of any. I loved coming up. Brandon Edwards was one of my favorite, you know, Michigan players ever. I mean, the guy was an absolute beast. I remember him, you know, catching, I think it was 3 touchdowns against Michigan State. I mean, the guy, he was savage out there. And then Mike Hart, when he came in as a freshman, running wild. Those teams were fun to watch, man. I really, really like watching those teams. And I haven't seen a Michigan team come close since. I remember that year they beat Penn State at Michigan in overtime. I believe it was in overtime. And if Penn State would have won that game, they would have went undefeated and went to the national championship. That was the year
that
they had.
Slant from 05.
Manningham.
Overtime. I think it was Manningham. Ending of Manningham.
Manningham, yeah.
End of regulation.
Yep. It was at regulation. I knew it was the last play of the game.
It was very late in regulation, yeah. It actually was the last play of the game. Because
I remember as soon as he caught it, the fans rushed the field right away.
My friend that I was telling you about, we went to a Michigan-Penn State game a few years ago.
I was at the Michigan-Penn State game.
I was on the drive up there. We're in his car, and he's listening to the radio broadcast of that game. Now, this is 5 years after the fact. I'm like,
jeez.
I mean, I'm nuts about certain things. I'm like, this guy's really nuts.
Yeah, he's into
We're listening to the radio broadcast of the game. It's 5 years ago.
How did he do that? Like, was it on tape or something?
Some of those questions I'm just scared to ask.
All right, we're speaking with Jerry and Piscataway and Lou and Hoboken tonight regarding college football.
Give you a Carl, you'd have to ask him.
Yeah, give me a Carl. Yeah, that's a classic Carl Smiley in that spot. My mic may be a little hot. Let me turn it down. Okay, so fellas,
Dave, something I want to ask you: why don't you post regularly anymore? I never see you on the board anymore.
No, I was on a break. I was on vacation for the last 3 weeks.
He was in Vegas.
I know you were in Vegas.
Right.
How was it?
It was good. It was kind of a business trip, but kind of not. It was a really good time. I was just doing a nerd convention. It's a Consumer Electronics Show. Chunky and I had a good rundown of it in hour one. A lot of good technology products. The nights were fun. You had craps and you had in the mix. You had slots in the mix and blackjack. And I don't think I exercised the nighttime to my potential. I think I alluded that to you on the board. I could have done better in that spot. I need you there. We would do a much better job in that arena, in that situation. I mean, it's the middle of the winter.
Hey, man, when I come to the West Coast, which I still plan on doing once I get my shit of work situated, we'll plan something.
I like it.
Cool.
Okay. I'm not.
Yeah, I want to come out for a USC or UCLA game out there.
Oh, that would be so good. What if you came out for
that? Would be cool.
My college football bucket list.
You would. What if it was a UCLA versus USC game? That would just be. You'd be in for a treat.
That's a possibility.
That might be a tough.
It's a tough ticket. It's a tough ticket.
I want to see the Coliseum or the Rose Bowl. I know it's not a tough ticket. It's an expensive ticket.
These are
100,000 seat stadiums.
What I mean. It's going to be expensive.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, definitely. But you can definitely come out for any game. I mean, I think the games, most of the time you end up, if you're really lucky, you can get $30. But you know, between 30 and 50, you can reasonably get a ticket.
That's not bad.
Yep. Not bad at all.
You made the trip out to New York, so we owe you a trip out west.
Oh, I'd appreciate that, fellas.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I mean,
hope we can see USC's Kim Jones equivalent there.
Who would USC's Kim?
Although that might be
I just got that. That's funny.
Scott rides in on.
That's funny. That horse runs all the way around the field too. She would give Kim Jones a run for her money. I still can't believe you guys. We saw Kim Jones, and you guys hung out with her. That was a scene.
It was weird, man. I never thought I'd run into her at the dugout.
Yeah.
Yeah, really.
Too funny.
Well, yeah. Bored moment of the year.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Most surprising. But, yeah. Anyhow, so, outside of, I'm sure everyone wants to listen to us three coordinate travel plans, so.
Quickly, we'll get into the national title game in a bit, but yeah, I mean, that's basically it. I spent some time with family in the other 2 weeks that I was away, so I just decided to just go off the grid completely. That was really it. It wasn't anything against the board. It wasn't like, F this place or none of that. I felt like this would be a good time to just connect with other, you know, with the people I love and just do that for a couple weeks. So that was it. You know, it's kind of weird because, like, the way it's structured with the academic level you get a 2 week break at the end of the year, and a lot of people don't get that. Like, they get, like, you know, the Christmas Day and maybe Christmas Eve off, but then everyone's back at work like the next day. And I've never really experienced that, so it's kind of funny. I've always wondered what that's like. So, because you guys all go to work like the next day, right? Like, you know, the days in between, like Christmas and New Year's.
Yeah. In my job, if the stock exchange is open, I'm at work.
Oh, okay.
So it's one day for Thanksgiving, one, you know, just Thanksgiving day off, just Christmas off, just New Year's off, you know, day before, day after, back at work. Some of them might be shortened days, and they might be kind of, you know, easy days, but it's got to be there.
Word up, I got you there.
Yeah, I'm lucky for me, I didn't have to do that. I had off the day after Christmas. I think it was, what was it, a Thursday, and I got off that Friday. So I don't get many, you know, days off. I'm actually looking at my schedule now. It's not a ton of days. I get off throughout the year, so it's nice to get those days off.
Cool. All right, guys. Well, happy 2015, happy New Year, and hope your is off to a good start. I know that it ate you guys. It was rough watching Ohio State win the other day. It was rough for me too. I'm a Pac-12 guy. I wanted to see Oregon do it, but let's recap the national title game and the bowl season if you want any other comments from the other games. But, man, it was what can you say? I mean, Urban Meyer has done a remarkable job at Ohio State. That defense looks real. That offensive line looks real. Big dudes. I mean, they just outplayed and out-physicaled, outclassed Oregon pretty much everywhere on Monday night. So that's about my comment on it. Lou, your thoughts about the national title game?
I was maybe looking at it from a biased standpoint. You know, I was tweeting during the game, oh, this is going to be like that Miami-Penn State Fiesta Bowl in the 80s where Miami lost by four and they turned it over five times.
Mm-hmm.
I really thought that was going to happen because Ohio State just wouldn't stop putting the ball on the ground. And, geez, think about if they didn't turn the ball over. They would have won this game by 35 points.
Yeah,
I think it just goes to show what will always have a place in football, and that's power. It's a game of power. If you can manhandle your opponent right in front of you, you can wear them down physically and psychologically, you're going to have a great chance to win. It helps to have some of the athletes that Ohio State has, especially at the skill positions that they bring in, combination of size and speed. I mean, look at some of the moves that Ezekiel Elliott was able to make to get himself through tiny creases at the point of attack, and then 10, 12 yards down the field, completely reverse direction and end up going 25, 30 yards untouched. Possibly, you know, some of those even for a touchdown. That, so he's able to do that. Then he's also tough to bring down if you try to take him on straight away. You know, a lot of these guys that are shifty backs, you put a helmet on them and they're going down and they're not trying to come at you again. Elliott, really, I mean, those two games he had against Alabama and against Oregon, you know, he showed, at least for that stretch, to be, you know, everything you could ask for in a running back.
I was very impressed by his ability. It was I mean, I didn't really speak much to Oregon's ability to take on big physical teams again, but at the same time, you're right. I think that he's really shown himself to be a very big threat. And it's funny to think about that because the guys that, I mean, isn't he like sort of a backup too? Like some other guy got hurt along the way, and it's really crazy the depth that they have on this roster.
And the thing about attacking Oregon, a lot of people said it. I know Mike said it. They're not used to getting into a street fight. When you play them to a close game, a lot of times you're going to have a very good chance when it gets late because they're not used to having to make, you know, to contend with run blocking, to get through guys in order to get to the ball carrier. It's usually you're up by 20 points in the first quarter and the opposing team's offense gets predictable. That wasn't the case. It wasn't the case when they lost to Arizona in the regular season, actually the last 2 years. I saw they put up a, you might remember this, late in the game, they put up a a number missed the first time. Actually, it might not have even been that late in the game. Whenever Oregon got down by 2 scores, this was the first time they'd been down by 14 points since, like, 2010 or something.
Wow.
Something absurd.
Wow.
You know, there's something to be said for maybe being that good of a team. You have your system and you have your playmakers, but there's possibly an even bigger thing to be said for, you know, being able to stand toe-to-toe with someone and being battle-tested like that. And Oregon, when it got to a close game or a situation where they had to make a comeback, it just, they were knocked off kilter. It was not the kind of game that they are built to play.
Really isn't. And it's funny, on two fronts. First of all, I was waiting for that team to finally do this sort of thing with Oregon all year. It never seemed to happen. I thought Florida State was going to do it. That makes that game even more perplexing. It makes me wonder whether Florida State simply just beat themselves. And they kind of did in the second half. A lot of turnovers.
That game was close the entire first half.
Yep.
Florida State missed a field goal, I believe, right before the end of the half. I think he actually put it off the upright of the crossbar. I forget. It was a fairly long field goal, but their kicker was excellent. But they were punching back and forth with him, and then obviously Florida State had, you know, the third quarter straight out of one of those football follies videos. I mean, that was a joke. It was over at that point.
That was. It was unbelievable. You couldn't go 30 seconds into a Florida State possession without them turning it over. And I said that to everybody, and then they did it again. Like, I went to get a glass of water, and I couldn't even do it because they turned it over again. It was ridiculous. I mean, it's kind of funny, too, because Florida State, we finally got their just desserts, you know?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. How much?
Absolutely.
How many times can they cheat death and get away with it? And then finally it fell apart. It was kind of poetic justice, wasn't it, Lou?
Oh, absolutely. I understand they're defending champion and they're undefeated, and it's kind of an unwritten thing, especially as long as most of your roster is in place for the next year, you're going to be number one or number two coming in. And if you don't lose, then technically, you know, it's almost like you're a boxer. You know, that belt is still kind of yours. So I can understand making the argument that they deserved a place in the playoff. But I think they were seeded correctly, and, you know, they got what was coming to them.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. So, you know, it was a very interesting, enlightening period these last 2 weeks. And the SEC took it on the chin, let me tell you. I mean, so this is sort of a segue because, you know, the Bama got beat by Ohio State. They were completely shut out in the second half. Yeah, Michigan came back. Oh, no. Michigan State did come back, but it was on mm-hmm. Baylor. But LSU lost. Auburn lost. Ole Miss got humiliated by TCU.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, my goodness. Remember that one?
Yeah, nice of them to show up. My God.
bad bow times 100. It was just so bad. The SEC really took its lumps. And this is kind of a new territory. I think the SEC dominance that we've spoken of in the past, you know, took a bit of a hit. I won't say that the SEC's done or they're down or never going to come back, but they definitely took a hit. It was a different year for sure. Jerry, your thoughts about
State as well?
What's that?
Mississippi State as well, getting beat by Georgia Tech.
Oh, that's right.
Who would have thought we'd see that they were an SEC team that had been number one at some point earlier in the season, get its, you know, brains beaten in by an ACC team in the Orange Bowl.
Triple option offense, and you got to give them a lot of credit. Georgia Tech has found ways to stay in games or win games all year. It's really wild, and so much credit to them, and their defense certainly looked pretty good during some of that. Jerry, your thoughts about any of this, the SEC being down or any of those things?
I mean, it's hard, you know, like you said, you know, you don't want to say the SEC is down, this and that. I mean, obviously Bama right now, they have the number one recruiting class in the nation. I mean, I think they reload, you know, with the best of them. And I think they'll be right there again next year. But as far as to reverse a little bit, a buddy of mine, he works for Rutgers, and he was texting me during the title game. He's like, you know, the SEC, their big conference was 2-5 in bowl games. He's like, you know, the Big Ten, you know, did pretty well. And as far as the title game goes, you know, I watch college football every week, maybe not as close as guys like Lou or Agency or, you know, the guys who bet on it. They really know the sport. You know, when you bet on it, and Agency just seems like that's his thing. You know, he does mock drafts, he follows it all through the year. But I watch it every week, and, you know, I keep up with it. And I was not one of the ones that believed in Florida State this year. I mean, yeah, I remember even when they were playing in the their title game. I was with, you know, my one buddy who worked at Rutgers, my other buddy who worked at Ohio State, and he works at Rutgers now. And they both were saying, "I'm telling you, Florida State, Florida State." And I said, "You know what? You know, they might win this game, but I don't think that, you know, I really don't believe that they'll be national champs again." And, you know, like you guys said, you know, it's only a matter of time when you put yourself in that hole that you're not going to be able to dig yourself out of it. And, you know, they kind of beat themselves in that game against Oregon, and, you know, they were never able to get, you know, their feet back on the ground. So it happens. And I wish I did bet football, because, you know, all my buddies are talking at the gym, and, you know, my other buddies who like sports, we talk, and, you know, they're putting in bets, and I'm like, Ohio State is going to physically beat Oregon. I mean, Oregon has not faced a defense this physical. They've not faced a guy like Joey Bosa. They have not faced a coach like Urban Meyer. I mean, goddamn, Cardale Jones was trucking linebackers and linemen. They were not ready. They got hit in the mouth, and they didn't want to hit anybody back. I mean, it was just one of those games where, like you guys said, you know, they were plus four in turnovers and still got the doors blown off them. I mean, they didn't. I was watching the game when Oregon marched down and scored real quick. I was watching it with my dad before I went upstairs, and he said, and I said, Ohio State's still going to win this game. He's like, "You think?" I said, "Yeah." And Ohio State physically just beat the crap out of them. And, you know, sometimes that soft stuff, it isn't going to work. I mean, you play a team who's just physically, like Lou said, power is not going anywhere. I mean, you have a team that can play that way, you know, you'll have a shot in any game. So it's just, we've seen it happen when they played Auburn too. I mean, yeah, it looks nice you know, during the year, you're scoring 40, 50 points, running these speed plays and stuff like that. But, you know, when you're playing a team that could, you know, physically beat the crap out of you, and they couldn't tackle at all. You know, you have guys running down in the secondary, you know, catching passes, and these little corners are trying to tackle them with one arm falling off them. I mean, it was pitiful. I mean, I was hoping so much that, you know, Oregon could win that game, but I knew just, you know, from a fan and from a football aspect that Ohio State had the edge in that game.
They really did. And, you know, I was completely fooled on this one. I thought Oregon's defense was better this year because I said, all right, Stanford, here they are. Can Oregon finally get over the hump with these guys, a physical team, such and such? They did. And then they did it again with Florida State. I'm like, okay, they finally turned the corner. And I got hoodwinked again. That was the most disappointing part to me.
Well, they did lose their top corner in practice in the middle of December for whatever that's worth.
Okay. Fair point.
But then again, they played a strong game against Florida State, who kept, you know, handing the ball to them. But, you know, for whatever that's worth, they did lose their top corner.
Yep, I think that's fair to say. But you know, I think Oregon fans are going to certainly question the mission statement of the team. Is this working? Is this finally going to get? Are they ever going to get over the hump with this kind of an offense? And you know, you start.
Do you think an Oregon team with that offense can beat an SEC team? Do you think, you know, if they do get to that big game again, which I think they can, the Pac-12 is not strong right now. Do you think that they can beat an SEC team? They could beat a Big Ten team. They could beat a team that will grind the game out, that will physically beat you, that have big bruisers. I agree with you, Dave. Maybe they're questioning. All right, wait a minute. Maybe this speed offense or running a play every 10 seconds. Maybe it's not going to work. You know, maybe we do need to, you know, run, you know, plays like a normal team, run the ball and get, you know, guys on defense who are able to tackle and make big plays. I agree with you, Dave. Maybe now they're questioning if this style of play will ever get them over the hump, because I really feel any time they got in a big game, even against Florida State, I thought that they could beat Florida State, but I did think Florida State was a more physical team. Any time they got, you know, against Auburn or against Ohio State, I just looked at them as being able to be, you know, physically manhandled.
Yep.
And, you know, I wonder if, like you said, if they're going to start questioning the style of play.
The question for me is, do they even have the recruiting skills to overcome that? Because I started to think the reason they have the same thing with Boise State. Like, the reason that they have these kind of systems is to get the most out of lesser talent, like less physical talent. I wonder if they're if they would even be able to recruit like bigger guys. Like with that, it's a very big question. It's like an existential question. I honestly have no idea. I don't think at the way they are right now they can be an SEC team, because they've already seen them play SEC teams and they usually don't come out ahead. They didn't beat Auburn. And if you remember in the regular season some years ago, they played LSU.
Last play field goal, though.
No, it was a close game. I agree. I mean, it was really that close.
Auburn by 3 points.
It was close, but
and they got down the field just to play devil's advocate here.
Mm-hmm.
And if you remember that game, Auburn got down the field for the winning score on a very fluky play where the running back was tackled, but he rolled over.
Yeah, and he rolled over. Yeah,
and kept himself up.
Yeah.
I mean, I still think Auburn was a better team in that game, but they. It was a last-second field goal, so it wasn't like they got embarrassed in that game the way they did the other night.
Yep.
No, but I mean, that's a team that scores. I mean, how many points was scored in that game? That's usually an Oregon team that could go and put up 30, 35, 20 points. Yeah, it was a real low-scoring game.
That was an Auburn team that was scoring 45 points a game, too.
Yeah, they were with Cam Newton and all those guys. Well, they had I think they had a decent – didn't they have a decent defense, Oregon, that year? I think I remember they had a couple guys on that defense that was actually half decent. But I saw their recruiting.
I'm looking at their like bowl history right now. I just have it in front of me.
I see the recruiting. They're the number two recruiting class as of right now in the nation behind Bama. So, I mean, the recruits are getting are talented recruits. I just don't. Maybe they're not getting the bigger guys. Maybe they are getting the speed guys, the running backs, the quarterbacks, and stuff like that. But they're gonna have to start recruiting some of these bigger guys that are able to take the punishment from an SEC team or from a team built like Ohio State in the bigger game. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, we will see what happens.
And
so
the question is, it's all kind of just to offer one final counterpoint here. You know, when you build a team, it's kind of a holistic approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to be nimble and fast on offense and run plays quickly and try to score a lot of points like that and constantly be putting pressure on the opposing defense, then you can't have these big, hulking, bruising offensive linemen. They're not going to be able to keep up. They're going to be sucking wind after your third first down. You know,
right.
So you need kind of a smaller, more
more
shifty offensive lineman, which is fine. You know, guys that can get out there on screen passes,
mm-hmm.
And all the zone blocking and stuff they do. On the same token, if you want to get really big and burly on defense, okay. But you also know if your main goal as a team is to have an offense that scores a million points, well, you're going to have to be able to well that and a defense that's going to be defending the pass all the time.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to be built, if you build a defense that's more of a run-oriented defense, you're kind of getting away from what your whole approach is here. So it's like, it's a domino effect.
It is.
Oh, definitely. I agree 100%.
Let me ask you another question, Lou, since we're still on the subject. Why did Oregon not challenge the corners downfield more in that game? That seemed like it would have played up to their skill set, but they really tried running the ball too much, and they had no chance. I mean, they just could not really get any traction with it. Did you feel like they could have been more aggressive with the passing game?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, you kind of said all that already needs to be said on it. It's a surprise when you have the Heisman winner that you don't try to go downfield a little more. I know they had several big drops early on. When they went downfield, it was usually between the hashes. And maybe that speaks to Mariota and how he actually is as a thrower. I'd be lying if I said I saw every single Oregon game this year. And half the time when I was paying attention to him, I was probably in a bar somewhere, and it was 1 in the morning, and I'm hammered, and I see Oregon's up 43-10, and like not even a point of paying attention to it, just because being out on the West Coast, we're kind of, a lot of those Oregon games are just at times where, how it goes. I'm not sitting on my couch in front of my TV. So I didn't get that many chances to see that, like, just sit down and concentrate on their game. So I might not be the best person to answer that question. But I always knew I was never a full believer in Mariota in terms of, like,
how great a quarterback he might translate to at the next level. I think he has a very good arm, but it doesn't but there's something to be said for being able to stand in the pocket, deliver that deep ball, possibly take a hit with a guy like just off the top of my head, like Kurt Warner did in that Super Bowl when he threw that long touchdown to Isaac Bruce to put him ahead. He got clobbered by Jermon Kearse on that play.
I remember that. Yeah, that's right.
A thousand other examples like Eli does or Brady does. And maybe it's just his instinct, the way he's usually going to let a play unfold. I don't really know. But I think it was a surprise that they seem to, an offense that seems to always want to stretch the field and use, you know, every centimeter that they have out there, that it seemed a lot more condensed. But might have just been something that Urban Meyer was able to take away through his game planning. I guess that's, like they say, that's the answer to that question might be slightly above our pay grade.
That's a great quote. All right, let's move on to the NFL in our remaining 15 minutes. I'll say it to you up front. Was it a catch? Does that catch? I mean, look, I know the rules said it wasn't a catch, and so the call was right in the Dallas-Green Bay game, but was it a catch? Like, if you just looked at it, did you think that was a catch? Lou, what'd you think?
Well, he caught the ball, but it wasn't a catch. Then again, I actually wrote a bunch of notes on this. He made the catch. He made the play, but it wasn't a catch. I don't know what a catch is anymore. I mean, if that Calvin Johnson play from 4 years ago isn't a catch, then I don't know what the hell is a catch. You basically got to, put the ball in a cradle and personally hand it to the official for it to be a catch. According to the rule, I can see where they made the call. I'm not a huge fan of it for obvious reasons. So maybe my biased opinion isn't the best here. But so, of course, I think it's a catch. Did it necessarily cost him the game? No, because best case scenario there, they score a touchdown, get the 2-point conversion, they're up by three, and they give Rodgers a ton of time to come back, where all he needs is a field goal to tie and a touchdown to win. It didn't cost him the game, but it cost him the lead, and it cost him their real shot.
It caused them a lot of drama, and we really were cheated out of a great finish because of that outcome. I agree with you completely. In the spirit of what a catch is, it was a catch. I mean, how can you have a possession of the ball and 2 feet down and then a knee down, and then you still have to hold on to the ball?
Three feet down, and he switched hands on the ball, and he dives for the goal line because he's already got full control of the ball.
Unbelievable.
And you're saying that's not a move natural to the game. I'd be the biggest hypocrite in the world if I'm going to sit here and complain about officiating costing my team a playoff game, because, I mean, if it weren't for certain officiating decisions, my team wouldn't even have been in this game.
Right, right.
I will say that it shouldn't have, if they had taken advantage, given themselves the breaks they'd given them all year, it shouldn't have come down to that 4th-and-2. Granted, and people might say, oh, Howard, you have the league's leading running back who's averaging nearly 5 yards a carry on the day. Why are you throwing a bomb on 4th-and-2? Well,
yes.
Number one, the play's not the first read on that play, I've watched it a number of times, as you can imagine. Romo's eyes are on Witten immediately, and he's double covered. It looks like his second best option on the play is Cole Beasley coming out of the slot from the right side, coming back over the middle. But he had a step on his man. He was open, but he wasn't clear yet of where he needed to be. So Romo couldn't quite – he was going to have to wait an extra second to get him the ball. Then he looks at Dez, and he's one-on-one up the sideline. You're going to take that every chance you get. The amount of plays he's made this year – in that deep to intermediate range, one-on-one on the sideline, probably half his touchdowns have come, if not more, have come on plays like that. You're going to take that chance every time. And I'm at a standpoint, I know that probably every time they practice that play, Romo's got it in the back of his head, especially given the situation. If I have a chance to get it to Dez here, I'm doing it. They've done it on plenty of other plays in similar situations this year, obviously not maybe 4th-and-short. But I believe it was Jason Witten that actually said in our minds, the way we practice plays like that, we almost treat that one-on-one to Dez like it's a handoff, because it really is.
Wow.
And, you know, the playmaker, you know, your playmaker got up there and he made the play, but it just, you know, it just didn't count. He's had, as a fan, I'm sitting there thinking, I don't mind them doing that because I want to do what I always say, do what my opponent doesn't want me to do. You know, that whole game that Dallas played the previous week against the Lions, I'm sitting there hoping against all hope that they just don't decide to have Stafford lob the ball up somewhere deep for Calvin Johnson and let him go get it. They really didn't do that, which I can't believe, because that's what I didn't want them to do all game. And anyone rooting for the Packers there has got to be thinking in the back of their minds, I hope it doesn't come to Dez one-on-one where he's got a chance to just go get it. And that's what it came to. And he went and got it, but, you know, didn't go their way.
No, I mean, it's just a disgrace, this rule. We've gone over it. Everybody I've talked to pretty much is on the same page here. It's just, it's a weird way to say this. It's like, it's a good call. They reviewed and they technically got it right from based on the rules. It's just a dumb rule, and nobody thinks the rule makes sense. Why would we make it work? Just enough of that, huh? Right? It's too bad. I think the Cowboys would have been so much more juice in this NFC Championship game because they'd already beaten Seattle on the road before. Would have been a lot of fun to follow that. I'm just disappointed in that, but the Cowboys had a great season. Let's go to Jerry, first of all, for his thoughts on divisional weekend, and you can include the other games like the Ravens game they should have won against the Patriots and so on. Your thoughts, Cap?
No, I was hoping the Ravens would pull it off, but as far as the Cowboy game, Lou, you know, he you know, was well versed in that as probably anybody's probably watched it a bunch of times. And me, I went back to the Calvin Johnson play. If that Calvin Johnson play is not a touchdown, then I don't know what is. The guy caught the ball, had control, had 2 feet in, went to go brace his fall, and the ball hit the ground. Now, you're letting guys score if, like, just the tip of the ball, you know, touches the line and then gets knocked out of their hands, you know. And if that Calvin Johnson's not a touchdown, they really need to look at that rule. Like Dez said after the game, he said, listen, you know, I accept the loss, but please look at the rule. And, from watching it, you know, both, you know, live and a replay, I thought it was a catch. But, you know, like Lou said, by the rule, it technically isn't a catch. And, you know, Dez said after the game, he said, you know, I've done that 1,000 times. I've reached for the goal line 1,000 times. It was instinctual. You know, I've heard guys were clueless saying, oh, you know, he should have just went down and went on his back. It would have been a catch. You think he's thinking that? You know, the guy's, you know, a yard away from the end zone making, you know, one of the biggest plays of his career. You really think that he's, oh, maybe, you know, they're going to call this on me. I better go down. No, he's the guy who tried to make a play, and you can't fault him for that. And
you have a chance to get in the end zone, get in the end zone. There's no guarantee.
Exactly.
From the 2-yard line there. You could fumble.
Exactly.
You could, Murray had already fumbled once in the game. You can get a hold of him.
Murray fumbled what I thought would have been a clear-cut 60-yard touchdown. There was nobody in front of him. He would have went a long way.
I mean, Pepper got off his block, reached his, you know, his arm came out of nowhere and took the ball away. I mean, you know, you can't even really get on.
No, he made a great play. But I think he saved a touchdown or a very, very long DeMarco Murray run because there was nobody in front of him. And that was another huge play in the game.
The Packers did that several times, and you can't let Dallas, to their credit, as many times as they look like the better team on the field, or at least the team that was playing better on the day, they let the Packers hang around. And you can't do that to a team that's that good in their building with a quarterback like Rodgers. You can't let a team like that hang around.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that, for all the, you know, the nonsense that Romo gets and all the ridicule he's gotten over the years, he's a tough dude, man. I was, you know, I'm not a Cowboy fan by any means, but, you know, to see him get beat up and, to see what he has to go through just to get on the field with the shots in his back and stuff like that. And, you know, he's a tough guy. He's a gamer. And you can tell he played his ass off that game. And I agree with you. You know, people are saying, oh, you know, they shouldn't, you know, throwing the ball down the sideline deep on 4th-and-2. Should have ran the ball. Should have done this. Should have done that. You have Dez Bryant one-on-one. You throw that ball up to him every time. I used to say the same thing with Randy Moss. If he has a one-on-one coverage, throw it up and let him make a play, you know? And he did. Like you said, Dez made a play. The guy had Dez played pretty damn good, and he got his fingertips on the ball. Dez just went and made a play, went over the top of him, grabbed the ball, and, you know, like I said, it was a catch, like you said, it was a catch, but it wasn't a catch. Very tricky rule, but, you know, those are the rules, and, you know, unfortunately for you, the Cowboys got, you know, the shit end of it. But the other games, you know, I thought the Patriots-Ravens game was really entertaining, one of the best games of the weekend, I thought. And, you know, I really was hoping the Ravens would pull it out, and, you know, Patriots, of course, find a way to win. And now that, you know, they're playing a Colts team, who I think, personally, they'll do whatever they want offensively on them. I think they'll be able to do, you know, run their plays. They'll be able to go short, run the, they'll be able to do whatever they want on that defense. And, you know, the thing you got to hope for is, you know, maybe Brady sputters and the Colts maybe put up a quick, you know, quick score or two to, you know, kind of, you know, put them in a mode where they have to, you know, come back. But I don't see the Colts having, you know, too much of a chance. I know it's the playoffs and anything can happen, but I think the Patriots offensively will do, you know, whatever they want against that Colt defense.
I don't think much has changed between the two teams since from a year ago. Not a whole lot. So, I mean, it's certainly not much in the way that they do things. And I remember their playoff matchup last year was a pretty big blowout. I know that the Patriots were at the Colts. I remember this because I was in Vegas watching this with Yachts. But they had their way then, too. I don't see anything that really points to anything different.
Jonas Gray had, like, four touchdowns that game.
That's right. Yeah.
Yep.
They do whatever they threw the ball, they ran the ball, and, you know, I don't think you know it's going to be a good time for that offense, the Colts offense, to go up to Foxborough in the cold weather. And that game was in a dome they played, and New England did whatever they wanted. You know, New England's used to playing in Foxborough, used to playing, you know, in that bad weather. I think that Andrew Luck and the Colts are going to be in for a rude awakening. Now, believe me, I really, really, really hope the Colts win for a number of reasons, fantasy reasons, because I don't like any New England team reasons, but I just don't see it happening. I think Brady is going to go back to another Super Bowl, and then I just have to root for whoever comes out of the NFC to beat him.
And who do you think comes out of the NFC, Cap?
If Rodgers was fully healthy, I would say that the Packers would have a really good shot. But, you know, watching that defense up in Seattle, and, you know, Russell Wilson playing the way he's playing, I think that they are going to. I think Seattle's going to end up winning the game. I think it's going to be a good game, but even, you know, earlier in the season, you saw, you know, Seattle put a hurting on Green Bay. Now, you can't go by that. Obviously, both teams are very different now than they were, you know, week one. But I do think with an ailing Rodgers and with the way that the Seahawks offense and defense are playing, I do think the Seahawks end up coming out of the NFC. Now, you know, it could go either way, but I'm going to go with the Seahawks.
All right, so you've got the Seahawks and the Pats coming out of the respective conferences. Though that sounds about what most people think. Lou, let's get your predictions for NFC Championship weekend, or an AFC Championship weekend.
I think as daunting a task as it still is to go into either Foxborough or Seattle and win, I think both of these teams have proven that they're beatable at home. If you look at the Patriots, could have very easily lost last week. They were behind practically the whole game until they went ahead with about 4.5 minutes left, whatever it was. They're down 14 to two separate stretches. They lose at home. They lost on the road last year to Denver. That's right. 2 years ago, they lose at home to Baltimore in the AFC Championship. The year before, they beat Baltimore by the skin on their teeth with Billy Cundiff missing a field goal at the end of regulation and Sterling Moore breaking up a would-have-been game-winning touchdown or go-ahead touchdown completion the play before that. The year before that, 2010, they lose to the Jets at home. The year before that, 2009, they get bowled over by Baltimore at home in the wild card round. As good as Brady is at home, and, you know, the numbers and his record are as they are, they can definitely be had. That being said, I think the Colts are going to need to get their share of breaks for that to happen. I'm not going to count out Luck because we really might be seeing him actually taking that next step. But I don't know if he has enough of a team around him. I think his defense is okay on their best day. I think they were helped out a lot by Peyton Manning just, I mean, looking like he was 95 years old last week. And the Colts still have no running game. But so I'm going to go with New England, kind of with a grimace on my face. I'm going to go with New England in that game. And then the NFC game, I might be biased because I just really wanted them to lose, but I was not impressed very much with Seattle at all last week. I'm sorry. They looked like they were shadow boxing for about three quarters in that game. They let a garbage Carolina team, say what you want, all right, they end the year on a hot streak. Yeah, by beating all the other shitty teams in their division, they end the year on a hot streak. And then they beat, they get a gift of a home playoff game against a team with no quarterback. So they're a garbage Carolina team. Let them hang around. And Carolina still had them on the ropes until Cam Newton badly telegraphs a pass that Cam Chancellor takes all the way back. Being that as it may, you look back at some of the recent games Seattle has played at home, and they've done that with a bunch of opponents.
90 seconds.
With everything in the world going for them against the Rams in Week 17, with them needing the win to clinch the bye and home field throughout, and they needed the Rams to make two big mistakes in the second half for Seattle eventually to go ahead and win. I think the thing about this team, though, is that they're not explosive enough as an offense. They're not going to put, you know, they're not going to put 24 points up on the board on you in the first half unless you turn the ball over three times.
60 seconds.
They're going to let everybody hang around because if they get up on you in the second half or in the fourth quarter in that building, you're done. You really are. I know San Francisco drove right to the goal line or was knocking on the door last year before Kaepernick's pass got intercepted to seal that NFC Championship game. But you knew once Chancellor took that ball back for a touchdown, that game was over. And there was still a decent amount of time left. I'm going to, just for the sake of being different, I'm going to go with Green Bay in this game. I think Rodgers, he didn't get hit much in the second half. I think now he kind of
seconds.
Knows what he's going to be like now that he's tested that calf out. I think they'll be able to take their chances. They got to do something creative with Nelson because Brandon Carr, of all people, made him a non-factor last week. If they're going to win this game, they need a steady diet of Lacy, and Nelson's going to have to get deep once or twice. So I'll just for the hell of it, I'll take the Packers because that's what I'm rooting for, and then we'll see a rematch of Super Bowl 31.
How? It'll be a much closer matchup this time around if that was the matchup. But all right, well, you got the predictions in. I will go chalk. I'm going to go Seahawks. I don't think the Packers defense is that good. I just think that they really feasted on takeaways. I mean, you mentioned the Peppers play a few minutes ago. I just think they rely on takeaways.
Well, just to say that, they held Murray. If you take away, Murray had a 26-yard run and a 30-yard run mm-hmm. in the game last week. So that kind of made his numbers look good at the end. I just happen to have this written down right in front of me. So he had basically averaged 5 yards a carry. But if you take away those two long runs, he was 23 carries for 67 yards. It's less than 3 yards per carry. They really, against that, Dallas defensive line, as good as it was, Murray did not have a lot of room to run a lot of the day. Will it be the same way against Lynch? Who knows? Lynch is a guy who seems to get stronger as the season goes by and
yeah.
the game goes on. And he's as good as advertised. But I won't sleep on the Packer defense for what they're capable of.
All right. So as for the AFC, I think just much like the two of you, I think New England's going to take that one actually pretty easily. The Colts do not have enough players around Luck, as you mentioned already. And in particular, their defense is just simply not that good. And I see no reason for them to not have their way here, just as Jerry said, just as you said, Lou, with the Colt defense. It could be closer. And yes, the Patriots are beatable at home, and they probably should have been beat by the Ravens, but it's a different situation here. The matchups are simply better for New England.
If they were going to lose to anybody at home, it was going to be last week.
Yeah.
No matter who came out of that game, Denver or Indianapolis, I don't think they were going to have what it takes to win in Foxborough this week.
Yeah, either way, I agree with you. So that's how I have it. Patriots versus the Seahawks again in Super Bowl 49. That's our prediction.
And I hope we're wrong. I would love, love, love to see a Packers Colts Super Bowl. That'd be great, but... Just going by what I think.
Means you
got
to listen to Mike talk about
difficult.
Luck for 2 weeks.
I know, but selfishly, I have in my fantasy, postseason, I got two Colts and I have four Packers, so that I'd be sitting pretty. But that'd be nice. But we'll see what happens.
Now, Lou's not wrong. I mean, there's always a side effect to everything. So, with that, enjoy the games, everybody. Thanks again for joining me for an hour. Enjoy, and here's to another, here's to a potentially new beginning in Michigan. It's been fun. Let's do it again very soon, guys. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Dave. Had a great time. You guys, you and Lou, you guys are the best. Hopefully, it won't be that long before we get on again. I had a good time. Thanks a lot. Have a good night, guys.
Thanks so much, Lou.
Yeah, my pleasure, Dave. Thanks for having me, and yeah, sure, I'll be talking to you real soon.
All right.
Enjoy the games as well.
All right, fellas. Okay, that's it for the show. And thanks again to Lou and to Jerry. That's it for me. I'm Dave Medina. Thanks also to Junkman Kevin on the Cape. Have a wonderful weekend. Enjoy the extended weekend. 3 days, 2 football games, NFC, AFC championship on the line. It'll be fun. Have fun with all that. And we'll see you next time.